how involved have you been in 2026, and what can you tell us about your involvement at any level of it?
Well, my involvement along the way has been pretty minor, except that I've been, I guess you could say, a resource to the committee in terms of, you know, the best example for them to try to learn from would have been Vancouver. It's the most recent, because Vancouver, frankly, was built on the legacy of Calgary. I mean, we took all the lessons from... I remember the first day I came here, talked to Frank King about, you know, what... you know, about the Calgary Games and what we could learn from it and what would you do differently and give us all the advice. You know, you're sponging up information trying to do a good job. And so, but along the way, I've attended some meetings here and come in and out from time to time just to help them. You know, I'm kind of interested in this succeeding. I'm interested in it for the country and how important it is to Canadian winter sport. As you know, I've chaired on the podium for the last, until 2 months ago. And so I believe in this. And Calgary continues to be the single greatest winter Olympic force in the country, if not in the world, as a city. Their contribution to Canada's success in Pyeongchang, I mean, yeah, you just take a look. The medal haul was profound, and Calgary owns a huge piece of that. And so the other day, sitting at home, watching this on my phone, watching the debate at council about the budget and trying to, politicians wrestling, trying to find assurances that they could sign off on this. You know, I just thought that, you know, we've lived this many times, and I thought by coming here for a day I could help maybe demystify some of the challenges and what it is. And, you know, I would just start by saying this. If you handed me that budget in its form when we were putting on the Vancouver Games, I would have said, thank you very much, I'm out of here, I'll see you when we're done. It's one of the best looking documents that I've ever seen in terms of providing liberal amounts of protection in the budget for all the things that people seem to be worried about.
Yes.
You know, cost potential, this and that and the other. And so basically I think they've taken a good long look down the road to the kind of things that could happen to them that could get them into trouble that's not of their own making, and do you have the money to fix? Like, we had some of this. You know, we had the worst economic meltdown in history to deal with. We had to navigate our way through that.
Sure.
Yeah, we had no snow. Which we had to go and find somewhere. I mean, who would have thought of that in Canada, looking for snow to find it? And millions of dollars worth of snow. And so you have to have a budget that's, you know, robust and capable of managing. So they have this now, and they have built into this thing a legacy plan that is their priority. And it's what they've decided they want. So that's part A. And the second part, which is important, is that when you actually break it down, they've got three or four significant entities outside of the area that are pitching in a very large way to help bring these legacies about. So I look at that, and we went through that in Vancouver and went through the same discussions and had the same debate and about what's an Olympic cost and what's not an Olympic cost. And we managed to deliver the games on time and on budget. We had a small surplus in operations and in our capital budget. And the other projects, which people talk about as Olympic related, which weren't, but were built in that time frame, like the train,
Canada
the
Line,
convention
Sky
center,
highway.
The highway, all of these have turned out to be juggernaut successes for BC. So today, if you wander around Vancouver and you ask people on the street, on the fly, or go in these venues and look at them, you would just be astonished at how healthy it feels. And Whistler today is the number one branded ski resort in the world. And they're not just a huge player in delivering tourism dollars in the winter to the provincial tax coffers. They do an equal amount in the summer. So the venue, the location has become a huge attractor of visitors. And then Vancouver's tourism business has grown, the cruise business has grown, the convention center has been named the best convention center in the world. The Oval is perhaps the best building of its kind. And in your plan, you're planning to build a venue much like the Oval in the Fieldhouse, which is kind of actually, frankly, puts you in out front of everybody else in the country in terms of being this place in Canada where you go to have this, you know, high performance community development all wrapped up in one place. And so I think looks to me like a pretty positive project now.
Help dispel some fear, because since 1960, the history of the games is costing a lot more than people sign up for at the beginning. And I think once you get in, it's probably a lot easier to justify it. And once you're hosting these huge events, typically massive infrastructure projects follow, like you mentioned in Vancouver with Canada Line, Sea to Sky Highway, and the Convention Center. How, like, this model freaks me out, because the IOC takes no risk and collects a lot of money, and the host city carries all the risk. Does that dispel my fears? Because Tokyo's double the original budget. Sochi was clearly a disaster. I don't think they want to be in Beijing. It seems like out of necessity more than anything. There's a lot of really smart, healthy democracies that have said no to the games in Boston, Stockholm, and Oslo. Like, dispel my fear if you can.
Well, for starters, I think Sochi and Beijing changed the way people were viewing this, you know, and Rio, because they were big budgets and so on. But London didn't. London came in exactly as London was planned, and so did Vancouver. And so they're Western democracies. And I think what happened in Norway, who's a very strong winter sport country, I think Sochi freaked them out. And the information became very political, and they went, you know, come on, this is too much to take on. In this country, we have a different attitude. I mean, we're held to a pretty high standard of accountability. I can tell you this, that when we got our budget for capital construction in Vancouver, it was $580 million. We were told by government, don't even dream of coming back. You have problems, you solve them on your own. You figure out, generate new revenue, find new partners, but do not come back. And we gave our commitment, and we put in place world-class construction teams, world-class project managers, and we went off and built those venues, and every single one of them came in on time and on budget. So it can be done. And now what you've done is you have this huge contingency to support all of this, and you have the example of how to, you know, build these projects and get them in on time. So, you know, I think it's for people who have tossed Sochi in front of you and Beijing, it's really not fair, because the Sochi Olympic Games operationally ran inside their budget. They just decided to build a world there, mm-hmm. and we're not going to do that ever. You know, Canadians would never fall for that. And so what we've done is we've tried to be responsible, and you're at the front door of achieving probably the single most significant Olympic legacy for a city in human history, because you will have started this in 1980 and stretched it to 2050. You've taken existing legacies, repositioned them, added new ones. I mean, if you're not the front runner in the country, you know, who is? And so I think you have to look at this in terms of, you know, what will we look like when it's over? Mm-hmm. I mean, in Vancouver, we built venues that when you look at them today, you would wonder, how did you do the Olympics in these venues? Well, we didn't build them for the Olympics. We built them for now. And we found a way to stage the Olympics in them. I mean, we built a brand new community center at Hillcrest, and we put curling in a hockey rink, even though there was a curling building in that building. So we adapted the structures we had to, and we did what you're doing, is we took every available asset in the city, whatever it was, and we put it in play, found a way to use it, and the city took on a very different air of, and the IOC embraced it. We are kind of the go-to place for modesty in terms of, you know, dialing it down. And so I think that the fears are what they are, and I think what they've tried to do is to reduce these fears. And I think what's going to happen here on the 13th is Calgarians are not going to go into the booth and vote yes to the council or yes to the organizing committee. They're going to vote for themselves. They're going to say, we did this before, we're going to do it again, and we have this capacity and this ability, and we have a terrific track record, and let's get after this. And I will say this, having had the experience of Vancouver, this is not a project for a small group of people. This is for everyone. No exceptions. The whole city has to be part of this. And I think you have that kind of formula in your hands now.
John Furlong was the president and CEO of VANOC, the Vancouver Olympic Organizing Committee. He joins us live in studio. Understand where I'm coming from. Any question that I ask is not necessarily a critical question as much as I'm very much undecided when it comes to what I'm going to do in 10 days. We talk about cost overruns, and we talk about, you talked about coming in on budget as opposed to some of these other games that have gone way over budget. There seems to be a little bit of confusion as to what counts as cost overrun and what doesn't count as cost overrun. From your standpoint, how would you explain that?
It's a great question. In fact, I think it's your biggest dilemma, is trying to sort that out. I'll give you Vancouver as the best example. So our budget for the Olympic Games for infrastructure was $580 million. Okay? We gave money back at the end. A little bit, not much. The operating budget was $1.85 billion. We gave money back at the end. We had a surplus to pay off our bills and so on and so on. So that was us. So while we were in this phase, governments and other partners decided, post us being awarded the games, that these projects were important. And maybe the window and the glow of the Olympics kind of really allows us to think rapidly of moving them to the next phase. We mentioned in our documents in Prague that the Sea to Sky Highway was scheduled to be improved, and the province was going to build that highway for 2012. They moved it up to 2010, but it was always on the agenda. Mm-hmm. The Canada Line, no one had any idea, and no one had an idea for the convention center. In fact, for the convention center, it wasn't even on our blotter. We were actually going to put the media in Richmond in a temporary building. The government then, with their partners, decided to build these venues. We decided to take advantage of them because they were there and they were in better locations, so we entered into business arrangements to use all of these. But they were not ours. But what's happened is that people have just lumped them in. And they've said that this cost for the Canada Line, which was built on time and on budget, by the way, and the convention center and the road, well, they're all Olympic costs. Because it's easy to say that. And the only answer I have to that is, if they were Olympic costs, they would have been in our plan and in our budget, and they weren't. In fact, the Canada Line, we didn't use it for anything for the Olympics. People ran around the city and they did what they wanted to do. We had our own transportation plan. It did not include that line. So you have that. So the question, I think, is, are all of the things we want to do included in this vision? And in the case of Vancouver, some of them, they just decided to do them. We didn't lobby for them, didn't ask for them, but they became part of, and they got into reports, and people said they were kind of inspired by the games. Well, if they were, great, but they weren't really, they were not part of what was the original Olympic strategy.
So it is your opinion that in this day and age you can do an Olympic game, specifically in this country, you can do it on budget, and you can do it for what is projected?
Yes, absolutely, and I think you have to. And I think when we accepted the responsibility, I'll tell you a little story about inside Vancouver 2010. When the economy went over a cliff, everybody was like seeing ghosts. It was horrible. And, you know, we had discussions about government guarantees and can we pay our bills and what's going to happen. And we realized, looking out, that every Canadian was struggling. People were worried about whether they'd have jobs tomorrow, whether their companies were going to be gone, could they pay for their groceries. And I had people saying to me, you know, you should stop worrying, you have a guarantee. And I remember saying time and again, you know, the public expects better of us. Okay, it's tough, so what? Do your job. And so we need to be the example of an organization that looked at this adversity and got it. So we were faced with a massive operating deficit when that happened. We ripped the project apart. Day by day, the entire organization got together and we tore out tens of millions of dollars to get the project back to break even, because we gave our word. And it's kind of I can say this, that if we had ended up in the red, my own reputation would have been destroyed, but the reputation of the project would have been in tatters. It wouldn't have mattered if it was by $100, $1 million. We gave our word, and Canadians take that seriously. And I think here what these folks have been trying to do is to put themselves in a position that they can deliver that for you. I've met them, I've talked to them. These are smart people, and I think they have your interests and the city's interests at heart, and I think they think they can pull it off, and I do too.
One of the things that is immensely hard to do, but we continually try to do it, is measure economic impacts, and those in a future world, in a future market that we don't know much about, right? It's 6-8 years away, whatever it is. Originally in 2009, economic impact was first estimated to be $10 billion in BC for the 2010 games. Then there was a small business minister in BC in the legislature saying it was going to be $4 million as they got closer. And then in an independent audit by PricewaterhouseCoopers done, I believe, for Victoria and Ottawa, they measured economic impact at $2.4 billion. That's a quarter of the original estimate. How good are we at measuring this? And can we trust people's economic impact estimates? Because they're way off in a lot of cases.
Well, the problem is that, you know, you can't write an economic impact study for the Olympics 1 year after about what happened. You know, I mean, for example, I'd give you Calgary as a better... We actually used your tourism numbers for us. And your tourism numbers started to grow a year after the Games, and they took up to 15-18% and sustained at that level. The world got a look-see at this area and they started coming. So it takes a bit of time. The year after the Games was a quiet year in Vancouver. Today, I can tell you, just go there, have a look, tell me.
No,
so the numbers are growing and so the business is growing and the economic benefits are continuing to accrue to the area.
So then this is my great concern because I really believe like everyone loves watching the Games, being part of the Games, the pride you would have. But when it's all said and done, this is a cost-benefit analysis. How much does it cost? What are the goods we get out of it? What are the positives? And it seems really, really difficult to find a true cost here. That's my huge fear, is that you could talk about $10 billion and then over 7 years it's 2.4 but measured. Like that's way off. How do we do a proper cost-benefit analysis when we're just guessing at a lot of these things?
Well, you can't. You can't do it exactly, no more than you can pin any single number down exactly. So what you have to do, especially in respect to staging the Games, is make sure that you have adequate protections in place to deliver the project responsibly. Another way to look at this is this. Look, if you decided tomorrow, and I've heard people say this here, is we're going to go build this stuff, but we're not going to have the Games. To me, I can't get into my head anywhere near that, and I'll tell you why. Because the games themselves will run break even. With or without, you know, they will run break even. So I'll just set that aside. But for these other projects, like the Field House and the other things that you want to do, you're willing to put up funds to help achieve these legacies quickly, and you've got people willing to help you do it. If the Games go away and the glow and the power and the impact of the Games go away, there is absolutely no guarantee at all that there will be anybody there to help you do it, and they may not be achievable. So the Games give you that bump. I can say for sure, like honestly, there's no chance in heck we would have had that oval without funding from other sources. So the Games gave us that force to do all these things
they
that we'd hope to do.
A vehicle for major infrastructure work, right?
And then afterwards is that you know, building on making sure that the Games is a catalyst for the things that the community wants to achieve other than like tourism. Business, that they are part of helping to grow the ability of the city to build on this. We were part of that. I can say the Board of Trade in Vancouver was a huge supporter of this and demanded to have access to what we were doing so they could, you know, bring the whole business community into. As I said before, this is not a job for the organizing committee. It's a job for everybody.
John, it's John Furlong, by the way, the president and CEO of VanOck back in 2010. The thing that I am maybe most skeptical of and maybe the biggest question mark I have going into this vote in a few days is the usage of infrastructure and facilities that are very much antiquated. I mean, the talk of having McMahon Stadium host an Olympic opening ceremonies blows my mind. I know what that stadium is. It has been out of date for 20 years, and the amount of money they're saying they're going to put into it, I just can't see how you could host a lavish Olympic opening ceremonies and closing ceremonies there. And the Olympic Oval has been around for 30-plus years, so on and so forth. So this is what I'm having a really hard time wrapping my head around. How can you have a successful Olympics while still using infrastructure that is very much out of date? What would you say to
that?
Well,
the answer is you can, and because today, as opposed to 1988, you have the advances in technology and overlay and finishing that you put into. Listen, we went to a stadium in Korea for the opening ceremonies that will be gone soon. It was a very modest stadium, dressed up to look like it was a jewel. And typically using Olympic overlay, you can sort of take a stadium and you can turn it into a masterpiece. And so you create that. So if it is the stadium that you use, it may not be. Who knows what will happen in the future? Because as this evolves and other decisions are taken, whether they build a new arena or do that, obviously everything will morph and move the way it needs to move. And you take advantage of the best assets you have. But if you said to me, you know, this is it. This is all you have. Have no fear. I mean, BC Place Stadium, we stopped using it the day after the Games and renovated it. It was a completely different building
for
inside.
Sure.
And it was all dressed up. It was all make-believe and using, you know, the operations of the Games to create that. That's not a capital thing. That's an operating thing. And so you can do it. I mean, I think you'd like to think you'd have a better place to do it in. But if you don't have it, you don't have it. And here, last week, they had the Youth Olympics, or 2 weeks ago, in Argentina. They had the opening ceremonies on the main street downtown. It was a stunner. And they used a pillar in downtown to project athletic images and people climb. It was an amazing atmosphere. People were jaw-dropped at what they were able to do in a place that actually has nothing. But they created that drama by using, you know, as I said, magic to make it come about.
Well, and then on that same standpoint, I know that one of the things that we've heard a lot from some of our listeners is, okay, if we're going to put all this money and taxpayer money is going to go towards an Olympic Games and there aren't new buildings and new facilities, is that something Calgarians want to get behind? I think that's a big time dilemma right now is, okay, what if I'm a Calgarian, what am I getting from this? Am I getting new things that will serve the city for a long period of time, like what we got in 1988?
Well, the ones you have will be made world class again. And the new ones will obviously be the best in class again. And so I think what they're doing is highly responsible, and it goes against your concern about, you know, stupid spending when you don't have to. You know, the games, you can create magic operating the games in existing venues. So why would you even think of building a new bobsleigh track when you have one that you can make work? Mm-hmm. Of course. And so, but what you want to try to do as much as you can is, wherever you can, is to try to make sure you get legacies that kind of fit into the bigger picture of the community. And I think that's part of the work that's ongoing. But I do think when you come out of this, you'll have taken venues like the Oval here and others, and you will have advanced their life, you know, given them life of 20, 30, 40 years more. And that, I think, is profoundly positive. I mean, if you said to Frank King back in 1980, by the way, we'll still be using this in 2050, he would have looked at you like you were making it up. But the truth is, that's exactly what you're proposing and what you will be doing.
Last one for you. What can you tell us about the IOC and the relationship that your committee had with them? Because I think that the reputation isn't great. It wasn't that long ago guns and prostitutes were being handed out to win bids. Like this, yeah. They kind of look like crooks that take no risk and collect a lot of money.
We followed Salt Lake.
Yeah,
when they had the big scandal.
Yeah,
and I have people asking me all the time, you know, how do you feel like being involved in a project where all of this is going on? And I sort of said, look, you know, first of all, there are a huge number of people in the IOC who go there to do as much good as they can. And there were characters in there that needed to be removed, and many or most have been. But this is our watch now. And this is on our terms, and we're going to do this, and we're going to give this to the world the way, like, and Vancouver's an example of it being on our terms. So let me just say this, though, that the IOC gets criticized lots, and they get hammered lots, and we had them as a partner in Vancouver. When times were really tough, and I can think of at least three examples that were horribly tough, they were standing right beside us. Where it was hard to find a friend, they were right there. They put extra money into the games after the economy went over a cliff. We asked them for help with a few things that we just needed to do differently. And they were there, and they were helpful. And I think what they've done since to try to, you know, modify and change and push for a different approach. I mean, the fact that they're willing to allow part of the games to be in Whistler, to me, is a remarkable shift in them, you know, asking for you to spend money that will simply be gone post-game. So I think they have moved. And I think, by the way, Canada and Canadians have had a huge impact inside the IOC on where the movement has gone in terms of drugs, in terms of fair play for athletes, and how the IOC is viewing these projects. And by the way, the single biggest check ever written for a city for the Winter Olympics is about to be written for Calgary if they win. It's a way bigger check than we got, and allowing for inflation included is still way bigger.